milked in unsupervised fashion, so there's a drabon on to consume the milk. And the reason for this drabon on the Gemara says is because maybe the non-Jew added milk from a behemoth to mea, and therefore the milk would be not kosher. So the Gemara gives a heter. The Gemara says if there was a Jew that was supervising it, not even supervising the actual milking process, but was in the neighborhood, was in the area enough that at any moment the Jew could observe it, creating a situation called mirta, that the non-Jew will be caught. So that's sufficient to stop the non-Jew, and it's sufficient to make the milk to be considered kosher. And then we had a whole discussion about what would be the din about this gzeira in a place where it's clear that the gzeira would not apply. Like we said, she'em be'edro tome, meaning that there is no behemoth tomea in the whole vicinity. There's no pigs, there are no camels, there are no horses in the area. So maybe we should make a gzeira. So we had a whole machlokas. We shown a machlokas. A poskim that we discussed, we mentioned the Aruch HaShulchan's very vivid story about the cow brains being mixed into the milk. Basically the Aruch HaShulchan was saying, we follow Chazal, we don't question Chazal, and even when it doesn't seem that the gzeira should apply, nonetheless, Chazal had their reasons, and the gzeira should apply. But as we mentioned, it was a machlokas, so the poskim disagreed. That's where we left it. Then we started talking about, I think the last thing we mentioned was a more contemporary heter, and that is government supervision. Inasmuch as today, most civilized countries have government supervision generally of products. So if non-Jews in the milking industry would start putting in pig's milk and horse's milk and camel's milk, they would be fined, they would be closed down, they would lose their business. So maybe we should say that that's the same thing as mirtah. And I went through the sugi with you a little bit that ri'iyah and yediyah can be often the same thing. That yediyah can be the same thing as edus, and we know, inasmuch as they're not adding the milk because there's mirtah, because they're afraid, so maybe we can be makel. And I mentioned to you that the Chazon Ish and Rav Moshe Feinstein passed in this way the cool. They were indeed makel based on this idea that government supervision is the equivalent of mirtah. And I mentioned to you that Rav Moshe Tendler once said that his father-in-law, Rav Moshe Feinstein, even referred to or considered what we call chalav stam, meaning milk that is under government supervision, he considered to be like chalav Yisrael. Okay, now that's I think the last thing that we mentioned.
You mentioned that lechatchil in certain cases you should be bothered.
Oh, okay, right. So it's okay, exactly. So now I want to mention to you a tshuva from Rav Moshe, where he says that he's makel, but with some added commentary. He writes as follows.
Who is this?
This is Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he writes as follows. V'lochein harotza l'smoch ulahakel yesh lo tam gadol urashai. A person who wants to be somech, he wants to rely and be mekel, he has great reason, and he may. Kemosh mekilim bazeh harov b'nei adam shomrei Torah v'gam habei rabbanim. Just like many shomrei Torah mitzvos, and many rabbanim are mekel, you can be mekel. Chas v'sholom lomar she'osin shelo kedin. God forbid to say that these people are not following the halacha. Aval mikol makom lebalei nefesh min haroi lahachmi. He says, nonetheless, for people who are Bali Nefesh, how would you translate Bali Nefesh? You know, people, extra pious people, it's more correct to be machmir. V'chein ani noheg lahachmir la'atzmi, and I'm also machmir for myself. Also interesting, but again, so Rav Moshe is mekel, but he says that he tries to be machmir. It's not clear also from the tshuva if he means that he's always machmir or he tries to be machmir. Not super clear. He also writes in his tshuvas that where Chalav Yisrael is readily available, now let's say the Chalav Yisrael is right there. You have two cartons of milk. Chalav Yisrael milk and Chalav Stam. Which one should you go for? So he says you should go for the Chalav Yisrael, but again, only where, you know, it's basically the same price, basically the same quality. All things equal, you should try to go for the Chalav Yisrael. And then, in Igros Moshe, Yorodea, Chelek Beis, Simen Lamed Hei. Again, Igros Moshe, Yorodea, Chelek Beis, Simen Lamed Hei. Rav Moshe writes about yeshivos. What should yeshivos do? What policy should they pursue? So he said yeshivot should pursue a policy where they purchase Chol of Israel, even if it's more expensive. He said because it's part of Jewish education that the Jews should know, the Jewish kids should know there's such a thing as Chol of Israel. There's such an issue, you know, it's like almost like a din called Shelo Tishtachach Toras Chol of Akum Israel. There, sometimes we don't want a law to disappear because people just don't know about it. Like in Erev, if you learn Mishnayos in Erev, so the Mishnayos say that you should have a portion of your city that is unenclosed and is not part of the Erev. Shelo Tishtachach Toras Erev in Israel. So also, like I remember as a little kid, I don't know when each of you first discovered there was such an issue as Chol of Israel, Chol of Akum. But I remember the first time as a little kid, all of a sudden, like, what? I mean, the milk I'm drinking is a problem? You know, and then, but I didn't even know. I was a little kid. Until you see the carton that says Chol of Israel on it, you don't even know there's an issue. And so he said it's part of the cost of chinuch. The last tshuva that I'm aware of on this topic that Rav Moshe wrote was in Igros Moshe Yorodea Chelek Dalad Simen Hei. Again, Yorodea, Igros Moshe, Yorodea, Chelek Dalet, Simen Hei. Now, in this tshuva, Rav Moshe appears to write something that seems to be a retraction. He writes that this din of relying on government inspection is something you can rely on only in B'Shas Adchak. What's going on? So, B'Shas Adchak. You know, in pressing circumstances. So it seems very strange. But when you read it very carefully and you see what it is, it actually is not a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein. It, in fact, is an endorsement letter. It's a haskama that Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote for the Vada Kashrus of Toronto, who was trying to set up a Chol of Yisrael industry. And so he wrote, he was basically writing an endorsement to encourage Jews in Toronto or, you know, to try to give backing to this industry of Chol of Yisrael. So it's not a tshuva. It's not a tshuva. Moreover, I spoke to my, maybe, you know what, would you mind terribly if we just shut the recording devices just for, like, pause them. Now, the Chazon Ish, who was also Makel on this topic, mentioned a very interesting pre-Chadash. There's a pre-Chadash who rules that's based on a sugi in Avodah Zarah and Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis. If you look in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, it talks about some of the food products that non-Jews produce, and sometimes there's an Isser that we can't eat these products because they were produced by non-Jews. So one of the questions that come up, let's say it's more expensive for the non-Jew to add the material. In other words, he doesn't gain economically by it. And on the contrary, it's more expensive. So there we paskin that we're makel. Okay? Then we're not in other words, if we're worried that what the non-Jew is going to add will trafe up the food, but what he will add will make the product more expensive, then we're not worried. So the Prichadosh writes, similarly with Chol of Yisrael, if it would add to the cost of the milk, then we don't have to worry. So, for example, imagine you're in a cow industry. What would it be worth it for people who are in the cow industry, the milk cow industry, would it be worth it for them to try to smuggle some pig's milk or camel's milk or horse's milk in? Would that be cost efficient? Very not, right? It would absolutely not be cost efficient. You have to turn down the whole system. You have to introduce the milk. That'd be crazy. So the Chazanish said that's another reason to be makel. Now there was another gadol. I mentioned to the Chazanish. I mentioned to Moshe Feinstein. Another gadol had a kula to be makel. And on Kol Stam, and that is Rabbi Soloveitchik. Rabbi Soloveitchik mentioned some of the kulas that we mentioned previously. He said, "Why is he makel in the United States to have Kol of Stam?" So he says, number one, Ein be'edro tame. Typically, where they're milking, there usually isn't pigs and stuff. It's a cow. It's a special farm made for milking cows. That's number one. Number two. He says you can rely on the USDA. There's government supervision. Again, any civilized country that has this, you would have the same heter. And then Rabbi Soloveitchik introduced a tremendous chiddush. He said the Gzeira d'Rabbanan was only where the cows were being milked by non-Jews. But he said the non-Jews are not milking the cows today. The machines are. Said it's a different thing. The Gzera just doesn't apply. It's not, he's not saying that maybe if Chazal had decided to make legislation Bisman Hazem, maybe they would have also had made this legislation. But they didn't. The facts are they didn't. It's a different Metzias. Yeah.
In terms of basic farming economics, the more milk they produce, the less the price goes down. So farmers would regularly have a surplus
right, as you're saying, they're never really running out.
They don't run out.
Right, no, they have a. Right, but the interesting question. Let's say, for example, we knew there was a time period where there was a shortage. Then
so
what?
Then you might.
Right, then would there maybe.
Well, the machines like some sort of shit.
Shlichus?
Yeah,
I don't think we really hold shlichus by machines. But yeah, I understand. If you want an extension of the hand, but okay. Listen, you can make such an argument. The argument is sort of made by machine matzahs that it's made we consider matzah shmura, etc. It's also discussed by tzitzis, and the like. But on the other hand, still. In terms of this exaggeration, but it's not a question of lishma here. It's a question of what was something introduced. If it's being milked by hand, you can understand a foreign product being introduced, perhaps. But if it's all automated, it's a new reality.
Is that like a worldwide kind of pet kind of thing, or is it just for Western countries?
Wherever they're with the part of the government supervision.
No, with machines.
Wherever they milk by machines. But they do, they typically do. Have you ever, how many people have actually seen cows be milked? Not by hand, but like through hoses and pumps and machines? Yeah? Okay, it's pretty cool. One of the things, I have to tell you, just if you watch this, you see the cows, they know where to walk. They're like, they just go. At the right time, they all line up. And then they walk into their stalls. There's somebody hooks on the hoses. And then they start milking. And when they're finished, when the cows have all given the milk, you know what the cows do? They don't go over. They don't say like over here. I take off the. They actually kick off the hoses. They remove the hoses themselves. Really scary. I wonder what else they know.
Basically, we're saying that. So they just made a view from
I think they really like the machine.
Right.
I don't know why can we say that? They weren't specifically intended. To say they're specifically intending is when you milk by hand. How else are they supposed to say it? They weren't like prophets that, exactly. Not by machine. How else did they have to express their gazero other than say, when you milk a cow?
Right, but the fact is that when you make a gzera, some poskim are willing to say the gzera only applies to a particular case. I'll give you another example. when it comes to medication on Shabbos. So there's a prohibition to take medication on Shabbos under certain circumstances. So there are some achronim, not everybody, but some achronim suggest that our medication shouldn't be subject to the gzera. Again, it's a big debate, but what's their suggestion? Because they say the iser is gzera shamimachek balsamimonim. It might come to grind up the roots for the medicine, the medicinal herbs. But the medication that we purchase today in a pharmacy and that are made by pharmacologists, they're mavushal. They're not nitkan. You know, they're not ground up. They're cooked. That's the culture of making medicine today. It's bishul. So some suggest that the whole iser shouldn't apply because the chalos iser was on medication that's nitkan, and this is a different sukkah. It's a different burial. It's a different being. So over here, in a certain sense, that's what Rabbi Soloveitchik is arguing, that the prohibition was only made in a hand operation. It was an operation where they're milking by hand. But once you're introducing an automated system, maybe Chazal wouldn't have been worried, and maybe the Xer doesn't apply. This whole system is separate and distinct from which Chazal was referring to. Perhaps he's not saying 100%. But he's saying you put these all together. You have government supervision. You have the fact that it's not the same system. So he was. He said that's the reason he's making. Okay. Now there were other gedolim. We mentioned. I'll take a question in a second. We mentioned the Chazon Ish, Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Soloveitchik. I also want to mention Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin Zatzal, was also a medical. He was in the United States the posek in the first half of the 20th century. Before Moshe Feinstein, it was Rav Henkin, and he was also similarly medical. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was also a medical. I don't know if you remember him or heard about him, but he was a tremendous gadol in the United States. He was similarly Mako. Yeah.
I don't understand the Chazon Ish's reason that because it's not economic, it's not economical to introduce the other type of milk into the production line. It doesn't seem that way to me. If you just got something like pouring advance of milk, why would it be so difficult?
Because you'd have to close down the city, like, to do that, and today...
But if somebody's sneaking it in, couldn't he sneak it in the process? Why would he have to close down the whole plant? I thought that's the whole idea.
Well, the production line... Well, the person himself, who's going to do this?
I don't know.
You know, on his own time, he's taking time off from work. You know, like, what is he...
Okay.
You know, and how is he going to get the milk? Like, when he get, where is he getting the milk from? From a pig, right? Who owns the pig? And who? And how did he got the pig milk free? Did he have to pay for it? And like, you know, the sort of assumption is that what's fueling this is the money. People would only do it if it's either economical or they don't lose any money. But to lose money and cause Jews, you know, pain, you know, it would seem not to be. It seems not to be worth it. You've heard this joke. The story, I don't know if it's a real story or not. It sounds true, but you never know. There was this story that I once read about this elderly Jewish fellow who had a store somewhere in America. And there were some non-Jews who were unhappy about this Jewish store, and they started, these little kids started running around in front of the store, picketing and yelling and saying, don't shop here, and hurling insults at the Jewish storekeeper. So how did the Jewish storekeeper deal with this? So he went out, this was like in the early 1900s, the story goes. So he goes out to the kids, and he says, listen, he said, kids, he said, I really appreciate what you're doing, and in fact, he said, I'm going to pay you every day a nickel for coming here and doing this. Okay, and then at that time it was significant. A nickel was 5 cents was money. So, so he gives them each 5 cents, and he says, come back tomorrow, I'll give you another 5 cents. So they came back again tomorrow, gave him 5 cents, and they did the same thing. They did the whole week that way. They were very happy. At the end of the week, the fellow says to them, listen, I had to cut back a little bit. I can only pay you a penny for doing this. They said, a penny? We're not going to do this, you know. It's not worth it. So, anyway. Yeah.
Right, might be halakhic issues a little bit different earlier in the first half of the 20th century because the rub that you mentioned was either the first half of the 1900s or the
20th century. Rav Henkin, right.
So right, the issue is a little different because, like, you know, milk was delivered by a guy, a truck.
The nib was shot.
Right.
Right, so wouldn't it be easier for him as well?
You're saying it's even more so to be Vichoshesh. Right, and yet he was Mekel.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Okay, that's true.
Right.
I don't know. I actually don't even know. I can't tell you. But I don't know. Yeah.
Couldn't you also argue that the rule that for something to be not kosher, it has to be more than 60?
Right.
So nowadays, with these giant plants, I'm sure you can't just dump like a bucket.
right. Right. Okay, that's also true. You'd have to be delivering a lot of pig's milk. Yeah.
Essentially, be treating the pigs like, I don't know. Like, it just seems like the example, like, when we talk about it before machinery, it sounds like, oh, a guy, like, oh, I didn't meet my quota, so we'll be throwing a bucket right. And then I get there. Like, now.
Right, it's very distant. Right. Sorry, one guy, right. Right. Okay, that's a good point. That's a very, very fair point. That's a really fair point. Good point. That's an excellent point. Okay, now, despite these mekilim and these heterim, there were poskim who are machmir. Just a list of them are the Chilkas Yaakov, as Rav Yaakov Breish, the Minchas Yitzchak, who is Rav Yitzchak Wise, the Shevet Levi, Rav Shmuel Wasner. These are all Haredi poskim here in Eretz Yisrael. Sure. The Chilkas Yaakov, who's Rav Yaakov Breish, the Minchas Yitzchak, who's Rav Yitzchak Wise, and the Shevet Halevi is Rav Shmuel Wasner.
What was the last two?
The Minchas Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Wise, and the Shevet Halevi is Rav Shmuel Wasner. Now they basically argue, number one, what I said earlier. They said, "Ein be'edro tameh is not going to help because we say davar shebeminyan, sarach minyan achel lahatiro, and it's a low plug. And even if there are no pigs around and cows and horses around and camels around, doesn't make a difference. The gzera is the gzera, and we're machmir, finished, low plug. And even though it might take a ton of you'd have to milk a ton of pigs and things like that, this is the gzera, and that's it. That's one thing that they say." They also call in the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer is in Yerodea, Simikov Zayin. He said the Chassam Sofer said something very similar, that we're not worried if the Tam doesn't apply. We're still going to be Machmir, and that's how they ruled as well. Rav Avad Yosef, okay, in terms of Sephardic poskim, Rav Avad Yosef is also very Machmir. And Rav Avad Yosef says that the minhag in Eretz Yisrael is to be machmir, which is also an interesting question. I mean, what does it mean to be the minhag in Eretz Yisrael today? I mean, is there an industry of non-Jews milking cows? I don't know. I mean, it doesn't really seem so, and maybe I'm wrong. But is there a non-Jewish industry today?
Is it possible that Arabs milking the goat problem
that
we have in Israel
doesn't exist
in the US?
Right, because you have a... You're saying it's goat, but they're not milking...
They're not milking pigs because they can't eat them.
Right. But no, but even still, I'm saying. But is there a non-Jewish milk industry that makes it out to the public, to the general public? I'm just trying to think. Last time I was in any store, I never saw any other milk except, the big milk industries in Israel. I never saw, especially.
Yeah.
Goat milk by Arabs and some, you know.
Say that the big companies buy milk,
Where do they get it from?
Right.
Well, I'm just trying to establish what's the minhag. In other words, if everything is milked by Jews, does that mean that it's the minhag Yisrael or not?
Does Rav Avad
agree? Huh? he says it's the minhag. He says that's just the minhag. You know, which could be that he's talking about an ancient minhag. It could be that he's referring to way back. If it's important, he would say the same. He said the minhag gear, that's what he, yeah, his position, it's the minhag, and you have to be machmir.
There's not just a default position.
Right. Yeah.
Just to expand on what Sam said, realistically, if the way cows are milked today, the machines would not hook up to a pig's udders. So if you were going to add anything, you would have to do it by hand.
Right, or external, or it was milked somewhere else and brought in.
Externally, and once the milk is taken, it's treated with enzymes and preservatives and whatnot, and then it's put into a thing by itself. You can't even access the milk until it's done being treated. So I don't even see how they would.
Like, how are they going to add it?
Right.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it may be related to what the Rav is saying, that it's a different industry. But. Okay, yeah?
There's no reason to differentiate between cow milk and other types of fish milk.
Correct, like goat's milk and etc. Right, correct.
Like cheeses as well?
We're going to get there. Yeah, we're going to talk about cheeses. Okay, now. Now, just one other thing. I'm sure have you ever looked at dairy products and noticed that it said avkat chalav? Like powdered milk. Have you ever looked a little bit? Okay, next time you look to buy a candy bar or something, or some other, you might see avkat chalav. Avkat chalav is powdered milk, and there are many people who are machmir in general for chalav Yisrael, only drink chalav Yisrael. But the moment the milk underwent a shinui, then they're mekel. That's based on Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank took this position. And so they're makel when it comes to a shinoi. And that might apply even also to candy bars, which might explain also what I mentioned earlier. Okay? maybe not. I have seen people who are makel for Chol of Yisrael specifically, but when it comes to candy bars and cereals and other things like that, if the product is already been a shinui, you're not talking about the actual milk, they're willing to be mekel.
What's the difference if there's a shinui?
Because they'll say that the gzeira was only on regular milk that you would drink.
Yeah, but the milk could still be used.
Yeah, I understand the purest approach. That's what I would go with. But, you know, if... Right, according, but their argument is, and this is of Tzvi Pesach Frank, that when it goes on, undergoes a shinui, so it's a name change. Since this is only drabanan, and... It's not the original product anymore, so this is job one is nifka. It disappears. Yeah.
How far does that chimney extend? Does it likewise extend to
chimney? Right. It's a good question. One would have thought it would, except for the explicit zero. So we're going to talk about that. Yeah. The cheese is a different, has another quirk with milk, which I'm going to mention to you in a short moment. Here's an interesting question. This was posed to Shlomo Zalman and others. Let's say you're makbid to only have Chol of Yisrael. And someone, let's say, on Purim, delivers you Mishloach Manos, and they deliver Cadbury's, and they deliver Hershey bars, and it's not Chol of Yisrael. Can you now give this to someone else who's Mekel? Or do you say, no, I only drink Chol of Yisrael, I can't give this as Mishloach Manos. You know, I can't give it to other people. What's the din? So, huh? No, you somehow get a hold of candy, you know, candy bars and other things that are not Chol of Yisrael, and you're makbid, so you're not going to eat it, you're not going to consume it. Can you give it to other people who are Mekel? Is it considered lifnei iver lo titein mechshol? Are you putting a stumbling block in front of other people? Yeah.
How would that only be if you still hold that there's a chashash for a non kosher milk nowadays? Because if there's no chashash, then you just hold the reasons for not zero, it wouldn't be really a problem.
No, but maybe nisa drabanan. As if you believe it's a nisa drabanan, then you'll be machshol the people in a nisa drabanan. So, anyway, that's the question. So, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Took the following approach. They say that lifting iver doesn't apply when there's a machlokas. If there's a machlokas and there are big poskim on either side, you can't say that it's lifting iver. The only exception to that rule is if you are 100% convinced that it's usur. Because if you're saying, I know this is machlokas and I'm being machmir, so it's not livnei yivir to give it to someone who's makel. But if you are being machmir, not because you're just not sure or not just because you want to be machmir, but you are 100% convinced that this thing is usur, then if you're 100% convinced that it's usur, how can you give it to another Jew? That is livnei yivir. Okay, so like the question sometimes comes up, let's say you're machmir not to, not to carry in the Eruv. But other people are Mekel. Is it okay for someone else to carry your stuff for you in the Eruv? You're Machmir. You know, but can they carry? So I remember once I was in a shiur with Rav Schechter about this, and so someone asked Rav Schechter this exact question. So Rav Schechter responded was, it depends if the Eruv is kosher. That was his response. He was kibitzing. But in other words, in principle, the answer is yes. If you're just being machmir, you really hold it there, but you just be machmir, that's one thing. If you really hold it's usur, you can't give it to other people. Now, just to be aware of the following, not that you're traveling to these countries so soon, but there are certain countries that are known not to be so careful about government inspection of milk. Included in this are Spain, Portugal, Poland, and other Eastern European countries. So if you're there, you know, if for some reason you're traveling, and you should be careful. You shouldn't drink the milk unless it's called Israel in those countries. Yeah.
Asian countries are fine.
I don't know. I'm not saying don't learn me lava mechlala tashomehin. I don't know. I really don't know about the Asian countries. I'm sorry. Yeah,
this Spain and Portugal is European countries. Does it also apply to imports from those countries?
Yeah, right. If it's imported, you would definitely, absolutely. Okay. What else? Yeah, let's say you go to an airport and you want some milk, or you go to some what's it called, some coffee joint, what were they called?
Starbucks.
Okay, you go to Starbucks. Okay, so you go to Starbucks, and do they usually serve, as far as I know, in these places they usually don't serve the milk out of a container, right? It's usually in some metal tin or something. No.
Yeah. Right?
So how do you know that that's government inspected? It's one thing if you buy a carton of milk, it says inspected by, you know, USDA, you know, whatever. It says on it.
You have to see the carton.
But, yeah, but how do you know, like in the back in the kitchen, maybe the guy mixed in some cow brains or, you know, make it extra thick, you know, or whatever, you know, or pig's milk or camel's milk, you know. How do we know? Now, maybe the takana should apply the second it's removed from the container, or if the container is even an open container. Because let's say the containers, let's say they have a milk carton that says OU on it, but it's open. Maybe they ran out of milk and they poured more milk into the car. I mean, it's odd, but can you be makel or not? So I'll tell you two things. Number one, I think that really technically you could be makel in all of those cases, whether it's in the metal container, whether it's in an open milk carton, because all these stores are under inspection. Also, there could be health code violations if they're advertising regular milk and they're putting in pig's milk, they get into a lot of trouble. And periodically there are inspections of their kitchens, and if they're messing around, they're going to get caught. But I'll tell you something that I try to do personally. In such a case, I would try to get a fresh, unopened carton and use that. Shelo tishtakach toras chalav akum Yisrael. You know, personally, I make it like Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Soloveitchik, and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkins. That's all. I hold that way. That's how I was brought up, and that's how I agree. I agree that that's that we can be makel. But where there are cases where you can start making chilukim and saying maybe it shouldn't apply here, it wouldn't hurt so bad to be machmir. So in such a case, I try personally to be careful. In such a case.
Couldn't we assume that the majority of restaurants use USDA checked milk?
Yeah, I would assume that, but we don't know what's going on in the kitchen. As they may have milk, they may have added to that milk something other, you know, some other milk. Yeah, yeah, that's the whole thing. That was the original. Remember, if that was the original taina, even on the whole chol of nochri. The whole takana goes against the rov. I mean. I mean, you can argue it either way. I definitely see what you're saying, but and I tell you, I remember the last time I was in the last time I was there, two times before, I went into some store. They had the regular coffee that they were selling, and then they had a little milk thing. And I didn't use the milk. I went, I bought a separate carton of milk, a small carton of milk, and I didn't use the milk. So I did. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be possible also to say that the Xera only applies to milking, therefore it doesn't apply to just unsupervised milk, which is lying around? I mean, if you know you milked the cow a few seconds ago and you left it around, would you have a Xera in that instance too in the days of the Gemara?
It would seem so. You know, as you're saying a Jew, let's say a Jew milked the cow. I say you're saying a Jew milked the cow, and then it was left around unsupervised by near an Andrew. That's a good point. Right. Not clear. It's not clear. The pashtus that was that we probably be makel. That would be the pashtus.
So that
right. That should also apply here. But yeah. Right.
And also it makes sense because if there's no non-kosher milk going around in the U.S. for them to
right, but the thing is that you don't know this. But the only thing is, that's only if you knew that milk was milk from a cow. But here we don't know where the milk is from. And as you're starting from the starting point, is you don't know where this milk in this container is from. And as you have just it's a metal pitcher.
No,
you don't even know where it's from.
The starting point is that it's the milk of the country, which is USDA.
Right, but I'm saying that's when it's in a container. But I'm saying if it's in a pitcher, you don't even know the original status of the milk. It may have been from a.
But the question is the milking. The problem is with unsupervised milking.
Right.
If there's no.
I'm saying the container may have come from unsupervised milk. We don't know. That's the case that you described, where we knew it was supervised initially and now after the fact. But here we don't even know milchatchila where it's from. Yeah.
Would it be possible to say that if you can believe the non-Jew in terms of that I poured, you can ask the store manager, I poured this carton of milk that I got at X store into this pitcher. Would that be a case that be?
I mean, if he spoke Masiach Lefitumo, because he just said.
So how does this milk get here? I have him buy that.
I think that could help. Yeah, I think that's an added reason. That's a big reason to be Samech. It's called if he speaks in innocence. It's called Masiach Lefitumo. We would rely on that. Yeah.
So the same thing applies if you're flying with a carrier from Eastern Europe and you want to have coffee.
Right. Okay. Same thing. Right. The same thing. If they have cartons,
you need to look at the cartons.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Especially since you said from some of those countries.
Yeah, right, absolutely. If there's milk in Poland, you know, Poland's best. I don't know. Right? Yeah. Okay.
American Airlines.
Right, I mean, usually you get a. Usually I think they have a carton. They usually pour from a carton. That's what they usually use. Yeah. Okay. All right, we have a little bit more time, so I wanted to start the discussion with cheese. What would you think? Would you think that just like we're machmir, you know, I'm talking about the original takana. The original takana of chalav nachri, would you think it should also apply to cheese?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm asking them. You would think that it should apply. So,
could it be considered a shinoi?
Well, let's assume we're not going to hold like that that thing for a second, for a moment. Okay, but you're right. It's a valid question. There's a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, Daf Chaf Tesem Beis, that says that Gvinas Akum is also. It doesn't explain why, but it says Gvinas Akum is also. This is a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, Daf Chaf Tesem Beis. So again, I would have, when I read the Mishnah, I thought right away, okay, the reason that it's also is because Chalav Nachri, Gvinas Akum, same thing, same story. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis, tells us an unbelievable fact. Yeah, Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis, says you cannot curdle pig's milk or camel's milk or horse's milk. Milk of a behemoth tmeya does not curdle. It cannot be made into cheese.
Is that absolutely true?
I think that's true, yes. Today, it's not true today. What happened? Because now with all the enzymes that people, you know, we can do it. It can be done today. But at the time, the Chazal, when they're making the takana, it could not be done. Okay. Apparently, also, it could be that it's so bad that let's say you have regular milk, and you're curdling it into cheese, and you put in some pig's milk. Right? It could really harm the whole process. It might work in the end, but it'll harm the process. That's how bad it is. It's like really messes things up. So based on this, it would seem now we have a question. So what's wrong with Gvinas Akum? Well, why should Gvinas Akum be a problem? So the Rambam writes, this is in Macholos Asuros, Perek Gimel. He says there's more reason, because you can't curdle non-kosher milk, he says there's more reason to be makel with cheese produced by non-Jews than by than chalav akum. But as there still is an issur. Okay, we'll talk about when you can be makel, when you can't be makel. So what's the reason for the issur then? If it's not chalav akum, then what's the reason? Why should Gvinas Akum be also? So if you look in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, you see that Chazal originally actually concealed the reason for the enactment. Okay, and the reason that you can see this is that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, offers five different possible reasons. The Gemara is not—it's not five reasons. The Gemara is not sure, so the Gemara gives five possible reasons why it should be also. But the Gemara doesn't know. So what are the five reasons for that kind of Gvinas Akum? So here we go. Number one, non-Jews, when they curdle milk, they use the stomach lining, which is called rennet, from animals that were not shechted properly, the nevelos. So you take a cow, it's shot in the head, and then they take the stomach lining from the cow that's a nevela, and they curdle the milk. So the status of the cheese becomes the same status of the nevela. You have a nevela piece of stomach, turning it into cheese, so the cheese has the status of nevela. So there are two questions that typically people wonder about when they hear this. Number one, shouldn't it be bought the b'shishim? And you have a ton of milk and a little bit of stomach lining, so it should be bought the b'shishim. And number two, if it is so that it has the status of the stomach lining, ask the question, guys. Let's say I have a glad kosher shechted cow, and I take the stomach lining. So isn't it bas v'chalav, right? If the cheese has the din of nevela when it's a nevela piece of stomach, so if it's a glad kosher piece of stomach, shouldn't the cheese that should be glad kosher cheese? Now you can start talking about glad kosher cheese, but if it's glad kosher bas v'chalav cheese. Right? Shouldn't that be the din?
Why should it be like clock?
I'm just kidding. I'm just saying that. I'm saying it's so absurd to use glad kosher when it comes to like dairy products. But here, since we made the equation that where you're using rennet, right, the stomach lining from a nevela, so the gvina has a din of nevela. So if I'm using the stomach lining of a glatt kosher cow, so then the cheese should have the din of a glatt kosher cow.
Okay.
You're asking why is meat just generally not considered basar chalav?
Or milk is considered.
Or why is it? Yeah, but. Right, but here the stomach lining is acting upon it. Here we actually have a case, right, where we say since the nevela stomach lining is acting on the milk, the cheese is midin nevela. It's also midin nevela. Right, but it's acting. It's not just a container. That's where the cow is a container. But here, it's actually acting on the cheese and converting it. So that's why it has the din of the veil. So if you do say that, so why shouldn't you say the same thing by kosher rennet? A second reason that's brought down in the Gemara is called cholav megula. There's a din that open beverages, if they're left open overnight, you can't drink them because maybe a snake came by and inserted venom in it. And there's a whole question, does it apply today? But that aside, that's another reason brought down in the Gemara, that they're not careful with this when they're making the milk. They leave the vats uncovered. Number three, the Gemara says that the non-Jews used to smear their cheeses with non-kosher fat. Number four, they used to use non-kosher vinegar, the stamienum. So they used stamienum vinegar to make cheese. You know, it comes from basically non-kosher wine. And the fifth reason is, chalav akum is still part of the concern. Because maybe someone put in a little bit of chalav akum, and so what? Let's say you put a little bit of chalav akum in your cheese. So since it doesn't curdle, so when you eat the cheese, it's not batel. Right? The cheese is going to be a little juicy. And it's going to be a little milky. Right? You eat the cheese, and there's going to be some milk nodules in the cheese. So when you're eating the cheese, you're actually going to be consuming some milk in there. So which is the real reason? So we're going to have to stop here. It's time for Marv. So I want to discuss what the real reason is and how do you answer some of the questions that we posed for the rennet. Why don't we have glatt kosher or glatt kosher basar v'chalav? So we'll talk about that next week. Erev Tov. For business. It's something to raise in theory, but it's not. No one.
Did they make it also, or did they
set it else?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a situation where you try to give more business to Jews ever brought down. Not even there.
So that it doesn't curdle. And then when you eat cheese, it tastes like, ooh, they've got bits of milk inside, yum, please.
One was this, stamina? Yeah. Oh, because they actually curdled it with non kosher wine.
The whole story is kosher. So then, in a general case, how can you trigger off the entire story?